This is the beginning of Class 9.
Now these different subjects we've been studying are all relate to omniscience. They are actually objects of omniscience sees them. That's why we've been studying, that's why I've been jumping around between refuge and that's the theme between all these. Those three knowledges do not exist really because they don't exist really as one and they don't exist really as many. Nina, do they exist as many in general? If you don't say really, do they exist as many?
Do you don't say it really?
If you don't say really, do they exist? Do the three knowledges exist?
Yeah.
Okay. They do exist, right?
They're not self-existent.
Right. Okay. Vilma, they exist as one or many?
They exist as many.
Good. So we can say they exist as many, really, Carolyn?
No, because they don't exist independent of someone's perception.
Yeah, basically that. Okay. Those are that's perfect, because they don't exist independently of someone's perception of them. And that's all you need to know from last week. Okay. Not too bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I didn't understand was how that ties into the fact that they don't exist really as one, nor do
they. Okay, we're going to get
there. I couldn't see what the logic was between those
very
two.
Very nice. That's what we're reaching right now. Okay? Do you accept that if something exists, it must be either one or many? It has to be singular or plural? I mean, there's only two choices. Either something is one, or something is many.
What about fractions? I mean, it sounds stupid, but
you could say fractions are one fraction. Or you can say they're multiples of that. 3/16 are plural, I guess, if you take it from the viewpoint of 16. It's three of them. Okay.
Actually, there's 16 of them, which we're only focusing on three, I suppose.
So anyway, if something exists, it has to be one or many. So if something doesn't self-existently exist as one, and if it doesn't self-existently exist as many, it can't be self-existent. That's the point. If something exists, it has to be one or plural. And if I can prove to you that something is neither one nor plural, I've just proven to you it doesn't exist. Yeah.
In order for it to really exist as one...
We're going to get to it. This is the whole point tonight, and I don't want to anticipate it, you know? This is the whole thing tonight. So, do not exist really if they exist, do not exist really as one, or really as many. A Buddhist has to prove three things here. And I'm just giving you a little taste of what you know. I mean, there's only two choices. Either something is one, or something is many.
What about fractions? I mean, it sounds stupid, but
You should say fractions are one fraction. Or you can say they're multiples of that. 3/16 are plural, I guess, if you take it from the viewpoint of 16. There's three of them. Okay.
Actually, there's 16 of them, which we're only focusing on three, I suppose.
So anyway, if something exists, it has to be one or many. So if something doesn't self-existently exist as one, and if it doesn't self-existently exist as many, it can't be self-existent. That's the point. If something exists, it has to be one or plural. And if I can prove to you that something is neither one nor plural, I've just proven to you it doesn't exist. Yeah.
In order for it to really exist as one...
We're going to get to it. This is the whole point tonight, and I don't want to anticipate it, you know? This is the whole thing tonight. So, do not exist really if they exist, do not exist really as one, or really as many. A Buddhist has to prove three things here. And I'm just giving you a little taste of what you will have maybe a year from now. Okay. We call the three elements have to be here, the three parts of a good reason. What are they? I'm not referring to one, two, three.
Subjection, characteristic, and reason.
Yeah. But I'm referring now to three relationships have to hold. And this is not on your homework, it's just I want you to know it. Okay. Three relationships have to be true. If those three relationships are true, the proof is a proof. And if any one of them is not true, the proof is not a proof.
Three relationships have to exist between what?
Between these three parts. These three parts are what? Subject. And you can call this the
characteristics.
The three relationships that have to be there. The first one is very famous, called Baksha Chokchu, you don't have to know that. It's that the reason is a quality of the subject. The reason is a quality of the subject. Number three does connect to number one. What does that mean here?
Reason number two?
No, reason is number two. So in this case, the reason is because it's yellow. So it has to be true that number one is number three. That's the first relationship. It has to be true that the sun is
yellow.
Okay? If that first relationship is not true, obviously the whole proof is not true. If I say to you, the sun's not blue because it's white, the sun's not blue because it's purple, that's not a good argument. Because the reason I gave you, which is purple, is not a quality of the sun.
could you rephrase what you just said before?
Yeah, the first relationship is between one and three. What I give you as the reason, which is yellow, has to be true about the subject, which is the sun. If that's not true, you can forget this proof. Baksha is Sanskrit. Chokchur is Tibetan. But we're not going to, you don't have to know that.
I don't want to know.
The second relationship is, I should state the first relationship like one is, that's relationship number one. The sun is yellow. And the guy I'm debating with, the person I'm trying to prove this to, does he accept that relationship? Has he already seen that relationship?
Yeah,
he obviously.
Yeah. If he doesn't accept that relationship, the argument's never got off the
ground. You'll never win it.
he has to accept that relationship. Or else it's a bad argument to give him. It doesn't prove anything for him. And secondly, it has to be true that if... This has to be true. If something is...
Yellow,
it's...
Not
blue.
What if it's green and it has both yellow and blue?
That's a common it's a common question by Westerners about this particular debate. We're talking the whole thing being one color. Okay, we're not talking mixed colors or patterns or anything like that. We're talking the whole thing being one color. If the whole thing is yellow, then the whole thing cannot be blue. Okay? If yellow, not blue. By the way, when you study Buddhist logic for a while, and after you get used to it, you realize you are doing this all the time. You're doing this every moment of your day. You're actually, when you talk to people and you're trying to tell somebody at work, you're trying to convince them about something, you're giving a proof in exactly this way. You're not doing anything else. And the way you think and the way you understand words and sentences is based on this also. This is the ground for everything you think. And every time you're trying to convince somebody at work or your husband or your friend or your mother or anything, you're actually giving them this logical statement. You don't know you're doing it and you didn't think about how it works. But you're thinking in exactly this way. If not two, not three means if something is not blue, which means what? If it's blue, it's not yellow. Okay. If not blue, then not yellow. Because it means if it's blue, it's yellow. Not yellow, sorry. If these three things hold, if these three relationships hold, if somebody understands, the guy that you're arguing with, if he understands that the sun is yellow, if he understands that if something is yellow, it can't be blue, and the third one is a little bit, we don't even have to talk about the third element, but it's also necessary for special reasons, then he can't deny the conclusion, which is the sun is not blue. He can't deny it. And in a way, he knew it already. He didn't tie it together. He had all the elements in his own mind. He knew that the sun was yellow. He knew that if something's not yellow, if something's yellow, it can't be blue. But it never occurred to him to say, oh, the sun's not blue. We're talking about a guy who thinks the sun is blue. You say the sun's not blue, it's yellow. You just became a Buddhist logician. That's a Buddhist proof. Why? He accepts the sun is yellow. He can see it. Does he know what yellow is? Yeah. Okay. He's seen what yellow is. He's seen what sun is. He knows what blue is. Okay. He knows all these things. He just never tied it together. Now, how does that relate to our proof tonight? We want to prove, first of all, what we call the...
Excuse me.
Yeah.
The last one, it does not exist really as one or really as many. How does that connect to yellow? Is that because yellow is just one? It's
right,
yellow.
Right, that's true. Sometimes the reason given can be plural. You can have two parts of the reason given. Normally you don't. This reason's a little tough for that reason. Okay. You've got two parts to the reason, actually. They're not self-existent one, and they're not self-existent. Okay.
Michael, is there any reason that they chose the many singular dichotomy?
Yeah,
I mean,
you're going to see why before we finish tonight. Okay, it's a good question. All right, everybody, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So,
No, we
want to
question.
See why. We can knock out this part very quickly by saying, if it's not, if something can't exist really as one, I'll say it again. If it's impossible for something to exist really as one thing, then forget many. If one self-existent thing is impossible, you don't have to worry about many of them, a group of them. Okay? If one Martian is impossible, I don't have to prove to you that 100 Martians is impossible. Okay? If I can prove to you that one Martian is impossible, then a whole group of Martians, you know, I don't have to fight very hard to prove that to you. If you believe that, okay, if I can prove to you that one Martian is impossible, then a whole group of Martians, you know, I don't have to fight very hard to prove that to you. If you believe that, if I can show you beyond any doubt that there's no such thing as a Martian, then I don't have to debate with you about 100 Martians.
I thought the many was a component of the one.
No, not in this case. It's a group of ones. Yeah. So I'm not going to talk tonight about trying to prove to you that they don't exist really as many. Because if I can prove to you that they don't exist really as one, I don't have to prove to you that they exist really as many, that they don't exist really as many. If I can prove to you that one Martian doesn't exist, I don't have to go through a lot of sweat to prove that many don't exist. So we're going to concentrate tonight on proving to you that existing really as one is impossible.
Any sense of one like one or these particular subjects?
Any existence as one. I mean,
as opposed to just three.
Right,
numbers.
But we're going to, whatever we say about them is going to apply to anything, actually. And that's the principle of Mother Nature, but don't worry about it. Okay, is all right? No, nobody tell us a chariot. Okay. How do we prove that something doesn't exist really as one? Okay. And I'll give you this proof now. And this is, by the way, I'm going to give you your homework right now. And we're going to go through it, because this is tough. Okay? You can't write the answer in your homework tonight.
Okay. During class.
That would take all the fun out. Yeah, during class. When you get home, it's okay. Or outside on 39. Push those guys over. I gotta write my homework.
Yeah, they won't mug you.
Oh my god, it looks fun.
I guess so. Don't read the whole homework, okay? We'll go through it together. No, we'll go through the whole thing, but I want you to do it with me. Okay, so this is more of an interactive homework.
Virtual
homework.
Oh my god,
homework.
It's so long.
Not as long as it looks, okay? Actually, I'm going to do it with you before you do it. Okay, please follow with me. The first question is this. The proof called the emptiness of one and many states, consider the three basic knowledge, half knowledge and knowledge of all things. I shortened it to the three knowledges, right? They do not really exist, for they exist neither as one thing which really exists, nor as many things which really exist. Let's confirm the first part of the proof. We want to know if it's true that the three knowledges are neither one thing which really exists nor many things which really exist. Give the proof for the first part that the three knowledges are not one thing which really exists. Okay? We want to prove this. All right, right here. Okay? We want to prove they don't exist really as one. And the classical proof for that is, what's the subject you're talking about? What subject are we going to be talking about?
Three knowledge.
Yeah, we don't have to change that part. Okay. What are we trying to prove about them?
That they don't exist really as one.
Right. And now we can just plug this. And the proof is, I use four just as because. So if by chance tonight you didn't have anything to do at home, you could just write this in the first light.
I didn't say it.
No, I want to go over it. I want to go through it. Because I have several people came to me and said, this course is getting too difficult for me. I said, well, okay, I'll slow down a little bit. Okay.
consider the three knowledges. They don't exist really as one. Why? Because they have part.
What do you write on the board, please? Can you say it louder?
Yeah. Consider the three knowledges.
Yes.
Which means, let's talk about the three knowledges. That's our subject. What do we want to prove about them? They don't really exist as one. As one thing. They do not really exist as one thing. Why? Because they have parts. Because they have parts. Now we have to prove each part of this proof. We have to prove 3 connects to 1. We have to prove if something is 3, it must be 2. And if we have to prove if something is not 3, it can't be 3. We've got to go through those 3 steps. They're here in the homework. Okay, part number 2. Question number 2. Let's confirm each part of this proof too. First of all, why is it true that if something has parts, if 3, then it cannot be something, one thing, which really exists? Remember, that was the second element we were trying. We always have to prove. We call it Jacob.
Jacob.
And this is the guts of this this is going to be the most difficult thing to prove. This is the thing that is hard for you. This is what you asked about. And correctly, I was waiting for someone to say, okay, I understand that if something were self-existent, it has to be self-existent one or self-existent many. But what's that? Why aren't those things a self-existent many? What's the difference between a self-existent many and just a regular many? Because they are a regular many, right?
Yes.
So, we're going to start with the most difficult stuff, which is, why is it that if something has parts, it can't be a self-existent one? Why is it that if something has parts, it can't really exist as one?
It depends.
If you take a part away, then you don't have it. Or
I'll tell you. You hear that said a lot, you know, and the lamas get up and they say, well, things have parts, so they can't be self-existent. And then you have trouble. I mean, it seems so obvious, and you wonder, well, who would think that it didn't have parts? You know, or who would miss the point that it's not self-existent? If all that means is that it has parts, I mean, who'd be dumb enough to think it didn't have parts? No, I mean, you hear people get up. It seems to me, it appears to me that it breaks down sometimes. They give the argument very clearly. They say, if it has parts, it can't be self-existent. If it's dependent, it can't be self-existent. If it has parts, it can't be a self-existent one. And then they go on. But you don't see. But you don't see what's the relation. You know, what are you trying to prove? What's it got to do with me? How am I ignorant of that? You know, and how, if I didn't think that way, how would things change? You know, I think that gets. It was very frustrating for me for many years. So. The point is this, and they'll get up and say this too. Take the pen, okay? And I'll tell you something very, very deep. And someday you will catch it directly. You will not catch it directly tonight because I'm saying it. But it will put a seed in your mind. And then if you are who you seem to be and you haven't seen this yet, it'll come to you one day. And the way to get it to come is to be good. Keep your morality, keep your patience. Do all this stuff. That's the energy that makes you see it someday. And it's that when you look at this pen, what do you see? Do you see a pen, mm-hmm. Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
A pen.
White and blue.
A pen, mm-hmm. Right? It's a pen. What? It's a very deep thing, mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing. But you cannot be seeing a pen. It's impossible. Why? Because you can't see the pen without looking at the top of the pen and looking at the bottom of the pen. It's impossible for you to see this pen without looking at the parts of the pen. But while you're looking at the parts of the pen, it's impossible for you to see the pen. And it's that simple. It's impossible. What you think you're doing is impossible. And it's so simple that you again, you get this feeling, well, what's that got to do with me, you know? Supposed to remove my glacier? What are you talking about? I'll say it again.
Yes.
What you think you're doing is impossible. You cannot see a pen. It's impossible. because when you look at a pen, the only way you can see it is by looking at its parts. If you didn't, if your eye didn't go to the top and then to the bottom, you couldn't see the pen. But if your eye is focusing on the top or the bottom, you can't be seeing a pen. You see the top of the pen or the bottom of the pen. You cannot see a pen while you are seeing the parts of the pen. You can't see the parts of the pen and still see the pen. What you're doing is impossible. What you believe you're doing is impossible. And so what? Who cares, right? As long as I can use the pen, I don't care. And that's true. What you're really doing, what's really happening, and you will understand it on the path of preparation, on a high part of the path of preparation. You will see this fact directly. You are taking clues. You never see the whole thing. And that's obvious because you can't see the back of the pen.
Or an arc.
You don't know if this is a fence that goes on for a mile. I mean, you're assuming, but you don't know. All you can see, you are catching clues. You're catching some blue rounded part up here. You're catching a line of light over on the edge here. I mean, this is why great artists know that. Picasso was playing on that. You catch a few clues, and then something in you makes you paint a picture in your mind of a whole perfect, beautiful pen. There's some habit or tendency within you that makes you interpret those parts as a nice, perfect, what you call, pen.
But Michael? Right?
In your mind.
This is something that I always had problems with. A 2-year-old or a 1-year-old sees this thing and doesn't cognize it that way, and doesn't label it as a pen.
No.
But they're not perceiving emptiness.
No.
So how does the...
They're perceiving a long white and blue thing. That's all.
But they haven't filled in. They haven't seen enough pens to fill in the idea of a
pen.
No,
they don't see a pen. They see a long white and blue thing.
Which is the same as a pen in this.
Which can work as a pen for a person who knows what it is. You see. Now, how does... No, so who cares if... Who cares? And by the way, then you mistake that perfect image for... You think the pen is out there, independent of your image. And you have done that with every single object of your thoughts or mind or senses for beginningless time, and you've made the same mistake. And you believe it.
Why do you say mistake, Mike?
It's not out there. It's a product of your imagination.
Why can't you say that it's made up of some parts?
The parts are there. You're interpreting the parts to be a perfect thing.
So why is it illogical?
You've been doing that for your whole existence. You've never done anything different.
Why is it illogical? Why can't you have different parts that constitute a pen? Why can't you?
I just told you. Are you looking at a pen or its parts?
Parts, okay. But parts
can
make
see
a pen.
At the same time.
What if you had a hologram?
Can you see the top of the hologram or the bottom of the hologram? Couldn't see the whole hologram, and if you couldn't see the whole hologram, you couldn't see the bottom and top. You couldn't recognize it.
But there was something very small that you could see.
You guys are anticipating the arguments of the lower school. And we're going to get that tonight. So I just say it, it's a very holy thing. I'm not kidding. At some point, just before you perceive emptiness directly, you'll see what you're doing. And that's your first direct perception of what? Ultimate truth or deceptive truth?
Deceptive.
You finally understood what you've been doing. You did not see emptiness yet, directly. But you directly perceived the game that your mind is playing.
But I still think that babies don't play that game.
They do.
They see a whole thing.
But even they are imputing. You see? Even they are... From the moment of conception, they are imputing the warmth that they feel, or the wetness that they feel, or whatever.
They're imputing it as out there and labeling
it? Yeah. They believe it's external to themselves.
Yeah.
Bugs do. Roaches do. Amoebas do. Okay. According to Buddhism, everyone does it. Okay. And it infects every conscious being, mind.
Okay. Well, they're saying that the particles exist.
By the way, is the habit of taking it that way or believing it that way deceptive? State of mind.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tricky, question.
No. Believing what way?
Believing that the thing out there is out there on its own, independent of me. Mm-hmm. Is that in your mind all the time? Do you always bring it up consciously? Oh, I'm it's not in me, it's out there. Are you stating it all the time? No. It's infecting your mind, it's coloring your mind. But you're not always on that. If someone asks you, hey, where'd you have your lunch for lunch? And you say, hey, you know what I'm doing? I think that thing's out there on its own. It infects your mind. It infects your mind to the point that if someone asks you, does that flower, where'd it go? Do they exist out there on their own? You can, of course they do. You know, and if they said, well, if you weren't thinking about it, would they be there? Well, of course they'd be there.
So what is the deceptive mind?
Deceptive mind. Let me
what is the deceptive mind then? This is the karmic seed. This is you're talking about.
The mind is the plain old normal perception of what's around you, and he's valid. He's okay. He's very healthy. If it wasn't for him, you couldn't see anything. He's what's seeing today. He's what's establishing things as existing. Does faith exist? Yes. Well, that's it.
So what are a mirror of character?
That's deceptive mind.
What about an atom? An atom still has parts?
I love this question.
A neutron, a proton?
Okay, so what are we trying to do?
So you don't see them.
This is the most difficult part, okay? I was expecting people to fall down. The rest is easy. The rest is much easier to prove. But this is the profound part. This is the part that if you understand, you can get very close to perceiving into this. Because if you understand this, you've seen one. Deceptive reality, which is the way things exist conventionally around the world. Okay.
Are you saying that lamas don't go into this because to them if they get it and they
don't
realize
what I can't do it. I can say that I was confused for a long time. And I felt, I guess I didn't reach the part. And it does come in scripture, but it didn't come till about 8 years into my training.
So what are the parts, Michael?
We'll talk about it.
You didn't reach the part in scripture, right?
That explained
that. Explained.
And it was just a sentence. It was just two sentences. Mm-hmm. And I tore it out. So let's say that we've established. You've gotten now a feeling for the truth of what I said. You don't know if it's such a big deal that you want to go to a 5-year course to hear that, but you understand it. So if something has parts, it can't really exist as one, which I said, what I'm trying to say is, if you perceive the parts, you can't perceive the whole, but you constantly think you're perceiving the whole. If you didn't perceive the top and the bottom, you couldn't perceive the thing. But while you're perceiving the top and the bottom, you can't be perceiving the thing.
So then you get to the point where then it might appear as a collection of parts.
But let me answer that and everybody listen. He says, you might reach the point where it appears as a collection of parts.
No, where it may appear as
a may appear as a collection of parts. Let's suppose it does appear as a collection of parts.
And that means it doesn't appear as a pen then? Is that?
At the time that it's appearing as a collection of parts, you can't see the parts. You know, if I say, okay, everybody in this room,
can I see the part?
Look at
the
brain.
Listen, if I tell, concentrate on this pen. Concentrate on the pen. Don't think of all the parts of the pen. Don't look at the letters here. Don't focus on the top. Don't focus on the bottom. Just focus on the pen as a whole. Okay. Now, actually, it's hard to describe it. You have to practice it. Your mind can go and grasp the whole thing in a sense. You know, the outline or something pen. And then it shifts gears and goes back to the parts again. You can perceive the collection of parts, but you can't do it independent of the parts. So I can say concentrate on each part, skip around, skip, 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 skip. Now try to concentrate on the whole thing at once. You can sort of make a picture, and then you slip back to the parts again. You can go into it in two levels.
But you can't see the entire collection.
You can. You can imagine it, and that's what I'm saying you're doing.
Furthermore, though, if that's the way it really exists, it'd take away one of the parts and it would cease to exist.
Right.
Yeah.
But don't the parts exist, though? Oh, my God. I mean, maybe the whole collection does not exist because it's made up of parts. What about the...
Now I'll tell you something tricky, okay? I don't want to get into it. you want to be, get potential confusion? Do you guys want it or no?
Yeah.
All right. When you concentrate on the top, can you see the top without looking at its part? Mm-hmm. Now the Svatantrika say, while I'm looking at the parts of the ten, if I want to see what I'm calling ten, the parts are there. The parts are there. And I'm calling those parts ten. I can find the parts I call ten. Ultimately, you know, when I get down to these parts, that's what I'm calling ten. Now, Sangika, the higher school, says, oh, Mr. Svatantrika. what happens, pray tell, when you concentrate on the top?
Of the top.
Then you need to look at the top of the top and the bottom of the top. So where is the thing you're calling ten? Oh, it's the top and the bottom together. It says, oh, what about the top? How can you perceive the top? You know, and what Prasangika is saying, you never will find a thing that you gave the name of. The Svatantrika says you can find. It will stop. The buck stops at the first level of parts. They say that. But Prasangika says, come on, be honest. How can you be seeing the top if you're not looking at the top of the top or the bottom of the top? So where is this thing coming from?
Wait.
So where is this thing coming from? How can you be perceiving it? If you can't see even the top without looking at the top of the top and the bottom of the top, then where is this thing coming from?
Atoms.
Your mind.
Your mind. Your phony imagination. Your deceptive mind.
Why?
Which kind of fills in the...
It's filling in.
No, but I'm not...
And why is it filling in a certain way? That's the point. You see, that's the where I feel that I always got shortchanged. Why is it filling in a certain way?
For order, for balance.
No. Who's causing it to fill in a certain way? Is it choice?
Karma.
It's karma. It's my past mental seeds. It's filling it in the way it wants to, despite my desire for happiness. Okay? I want it to fill in things always the way I would like, you know. I would like dinner to be filled in as delicious. And I would like my boss to be filled in as saying, you know, you're really the best employee you have. And it's the same parts, but it's refusing to fill it in that way, despite my desires. That's samsara. That's suffering.
What about if you narrow it down? I mean, what are you saying, if I understood you correctly, is that if you break it down, if you go into the part, you'll see the part. You see the bottom, the top of the part, and the bottom of the part. If you narrow it down more, you'll see again. What about if you really get to
we'll
neutrons
get there.
And neutrons?
We're getting there. We're
isn't
getting
that
there.
Also...
I'm getting there. It's a beautiful, beautiful question, because it's exactly where the argument goes next. It's exactly where all the great saints of India have decided they should go next. So your mind is going in the right direction. So, let's talk about what Nina said. Let's talk about... So you now have the answer to number two.
Okay.
Particle.
We do. Now, I'm not going to repeat it. You distill what I said, but don't forget the pen. I mean, use the pen if you like. Okay, number three. Svatantrika system says the reason here, which is what? The reason is here. Because they have... Here's the reason, right? They say that this having parts applies to every object that exists in the universe. You uncomfortable with that?
Say it again, Michael.
They say this reason applies to everything in the universe. Everything in the universe has parts. Remember the first course? Didn't they say that? Wasn't that the independent? That independent means mm-hmm. Something. They say that everything in the universe has parts. Therefore, the three knowledges, what?
They are one of the
they
things
exist.
In the universe.
They're one of the things in the universe. What are they getting to? They're getting to this. Remember, if we want to prove something, we have to prove this relationship also. We just proved the worst one, the hardest one. That was if three, then two. But now, we're going to try to prove one is three, meaning... The three knowledges are what?
Have parts.
And the Svatantrika say, hey, you guys, if you want to prove that the three knowledges have parts, let's just prove that everything in the universe has parts. Probably cover the three knowledges. All right? Overkill. to prove that the three knowledges have parts, I'm sorry, to prove that all things have parts, you have to prove that changing things have parts and that unchanging things have parts. And by the way, there's only two possibilities in the universe. You are either changing thing or you are an unchanging thing.
Sometimes they break things down into composed and...
Yeah, that's incorrect. It's just a mistake. It's a mistranslation.
That's a mistranslation of changing and unchanging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, the normal translation here is permanent and impermanent, and that's a mistranslation.
What about produced and unproduced?
That's better.
Mm, or...
But it's not great because there's unproduced things that don't exist.
Why isn't unchanging impermanent?
Well, I don't want to get too much into it, but is the emptiness of this pen what they call permanent in the normal translation? It is.
Yeah.
It will go out of existence when I destroy the pen.
Right.
Does that fit your idea of permanent?
No.
So I think it's a bad translation. You see?
Oh, because permanent means... Okay.
Permanent means eternal.
Yeah.
And that ain't what the Buddhist terms mean. It just means unchanging. For such time as the emptiness of this pen does exist, it will never change its quality. It won't get more empty, less empty. As long as there's no elephant in this room is empty of elephants. And it's not like half empty of elements or 5 minutes later empty of elements or any more or less empty of elements or any less empty of elephants. It's either in there or not. If you put an elephant in here, the emptiness of elephants is gone. Okay. Is it permanent? It is what the translations say. Permanent. It's bad. I don't like that translation. I will use it, but I think students have to understand that. Okay. Prove this. You must prove that changing things and unchanging things have parts. So we can divide all things in the universe into those things that change and those things that
change. Why do you have to even divide it? Why can't you say all things? Why do you have to say changing and unchanging?
Because if we can prove that changing things don't have... If we can prove that all changing things have parts, and if we can also prove that all unchanging things have parts...
Why do you still have to divide it? Why can't you say all things?
I'm trying to prove it to you. Everyone in this office is an asshole. Prove it to me. Well, Tom over there, you should hear what he said to me yesterday. And you don't believe what you said to me. I mean, at the end, if I've gone through everybody, now do you agree everybody is?
Yeah, but you didn't divide.
So if I say everything in the universe is changing, has parts. Everything in the universe has parts. One good way to do it is to go through the things one by one and say, look, everything on that side of the office is and everybody on that side of the office is So do you agree everybody in this office is Okay. No, I mean, you have to prove something, come on. I can prove that all the
parts of the thing are... Why you have to separate? That's still not
I just told you why. If I'm in your office and I say everybody in Nina's office is a son of a gun, and you say, well, prove it, and then how do I prove it?
Yeah, but you didn't say everybody in your office is either son of a gun or not son of a gun. You know what I mean? You didn't say that. You just said son of a gun. One choice. Here you have two.
I am dividing each person. I'm dividing everybody into each person.
You know why he says it that way? Because if he didn't, and he said everything has got to be changing, then one person in class is going to stand and say, what about the things that are not changing? So you have to just think.
No, it's not for that. It's that when I want to prove something about everybody in your office, I can do it if I prove it about every person individually in your office. Right? That's how I have to do it.
Okay, but you still did not say... you didn't present it as bad versus good, or you didn't present in two formats. Rather, here you did, changing and unchanging.
Oh, no, I'm saying John or Tom. John and Tom are both bad guys. Prove it. Well, first I'll prove John is a bad guy, and then I'll prove Tom is a bad guy. And then I've got it done. I proved it for both of the bad guys. Okay, divide and conquer. All right, next. Think about it. To prove that changing things have parts, you must prove that physical things have parts and that mental things have parts, because mainly those are the two divisions of changing things. And you'll learn that today. If a thing is changing, broadly speaking, it has to be either mental or physical.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I'm trying to prove everything in the universe has parts. And by doing that, I split everything into changing things an unchanging thing. And if I can prove to you that the only two choices in the universe are both have parts, then I've proved that everything has parts. Now, to prove that the first part has parts, which is what?
Changing
things, I'm going to split them into two parts and prove that both of those parts have parts. Now, the only, basically speaking, and there's an exception, and I'm not going to get into it, if a thing is changing, it either has to be mental or physical.
So these are the two parts you're dividing into?
Yeah, there's only two choices. You can go like this. Here, this will make it easier.
Mental and what am I?
Physical.
Thank you. Like Olivia Newton-John, let's get physical.
What?
That's a really bad song in the 70s.
Bad song in the 80s and
90s. It's unchanging badness.
Actually, on Mars, they think it's great. So it can't be.
By the way, things are a little delicate. But I'm going to leave it for now because it's easy.
Delicate things are undelicate.
What is the other word?
Subtle.
Subtle.
Gross. Subtle.
Gross. Thank
gross.
You.
Like John Hill also.
So if I want to prove that things all have parts, I have to prove that changing things all have parts, unchanging things all have parts. By the way, what's the big deal about proving that things have parts? If I can prove that everything has parts, then what I said about the pen applies to all things, and then all things are
empty. But you still haven't answered the atom question.
If I can prove, I'm getting there because he's right here. If I can prove that, if I can prove that if something has parts, it's unreal. If it's true that if anything has parts, it's unreal, and then if I can prove that everything in the universe has parts, then you're going to have to accept what?
Everything's empty. I'll accept
it. Everything's unreal.
So
I'm just trying to work. It's a little bit hard to prove that everything has parts, but that's what we're going to spend this evening on. And if now, because of what I said about the pen at the opening, which is never forget that, that's a holy thing, it will help you someday. If I can prove that fact about all things in the universe, then everything is empty. Then there's not a thing in your life or in this universe which doesn't come by means of your own conceptions and your own karma that's forcing you on. Even the universe, even the galaxy, okay. Even atoms of carbon. We were going to, if we prove this and this one, we prove this one. If we prove this and this one, we prove this one. If we prove this and this one, we prove this one, and then there's no other choices. Okay. We're down to gross subtle things and subtle, I'm sorry, gross physical things and subtle physical things. I'll cover those two and then we'll take a break. Gross. She's gross from girl school. Now, come on. Okay. Gross is very easy. If I cover my two fingers, I can prove my hand has parts. Because by covering this, this doesn't disappear. So I would have to move the same way. If they weren't separate parts. It's simple, okay? I'll say it again. There's two proofs in the scripture. One is that if you cover part of a big physical thing, the other part doesn't disappear, so there must be different parts. If you move
Michael.
I gave you two examples for number three. You only need one. The second thing is, I mean, if I didn't have any parts, then when I move my right arm, my left arm should move. If they're not separate parts, then or when I wink this eye and the other eye, and those are all examples from scripture.
When you say remove, do you mean simply remove from view, or remove as well if you cut your two fingers off?
Well, I meant from view.
No, but it's true. If you cut your two fingers
that's
off, you still
true
have a hand, right?
Well, if you cut your two fingers off, the other two don't fall off.
Or
if they weren't parts, if
right
your hand didn't have parts, then the other two would fall off.
And same thing goes if you took the inside of the pen out from behind, and we couldn't see
yeah
it, then the pen should cease to exist, right?
Right. Now, subtle ones, this is where we get into atoms. This is Vicari's atom. This is a beautiful argument. You know.
Weird.
Okay. Does that happen to be
number four?
You're lucky. This is This is pretty interesting, and this is the one that the Dalai Lama often brings up, and this is where this is why it's coming. Okay. Let's say you get down to the smallest atoms in the universe. Miss Vicari's instincts want her to say they don't have any parts.
Right.
And the Buddhist philosopher says, is it by putting atoms together that you make things? Do atoms blend into each other? Do these two atoms go like this?
No.
Or do they have to be? Can they invade each other's space? Or can they just overlap totally? Can every side of one atom be covered by the side of the atom next to it? Can every surface on that atom
be touched? Can they merge or not? Right?
Be touched partially by the atom
totally
next to it? Is it that every part of this atom touches every part of this atom? Which is would end up looking like that, and everything would be one atom big, and I wouldn't be here. Or is it that somehow they touch on one place, or even on a couple of places, but they don't touch on the other sides, the far sides? I mean, you have to say this, because if you say this, you wouldn't have anything bigger than an atom.
Okay.
As long as they exist in this way, which Miss Vicari says now, there has to be a side that's touched and a side that's not touched. Okay. There has to be a left side and a right side, or an inside or an outside, or a near side or a far side. And that's parts.
I knew you were going to say that.
Can't
you make it small enough that you cannot say up or down?
I didn't say up or down.
I mean left touching, non-touching sides.
No, if they don't make some kind of contact, or if they're not close, how can you have a thing? How can a thing be made up of those things? If they're not somehow grouped together. How can it, and then when you group them, I don't care if you want to say they have fields and they can actually kind of go like this, but in any case, there's going to be a far side which is closer to the field in which they semi-merge, or there's going to be a closer part to the field in which they semi-merge, but in any case, there's going to be a left side and a right side, or a near side and a far side, or there always will be, or else you couldn't make a thing of it. If every surface, every point on the surface of one atom touched every point on the surface of another atom, everything would just merge into one.
We have one atom.
And everything would be single atom, and you couldn't eat the desserts upstairs. Okay, we'll do mental work.
So are you saying that there's no such a thing as one atom in the universe by itself?
Such thing as a subtle physical thing which doesn't have parts. And I've already proven to you that there's no such thing as a bigger physical thing that doesn't have parts. Therefore, what? There's no such thing as a physical thing. No physical thing in the universe doesn't have parts. Or everything physical in the universe has parts. Because I proved it for atoms and I proved it for anything matter. Have a break.
Why are you calling this?
Things have parts too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What are mental things?
Your mind and your mental functions. Your basic awareness of anything, and then all those little mental functions like jealousy, anger, concentration, love, not bodhicitta.
Right.
So those are mental things. Now we talk about direct, two kinds of causes, okay? One is direct cause and one is indirect cause. Okay.
Causes of what?
I should say direct and, you give me a good word when I explain it. Direct means happening right after the other, with no other thing in between. So you can say Nina's awareness, your visual awareness of me, at 8:30, and your visual awareness of me at 8:30.01. The next second.
Millisecond.
Okay. The very next millisecond.
Okay.
That your awareness of my color and shape, visual awareness of me at 8:30.00, and your awareness of me at 8:30.01. These are what we call direct cause and direct result. Okay. Your visual awareness at 8:30.00 is the direct cause for your visual awareness at 8:30.01. I am contributing as the object, but I'm not the direct cause. The direct cause is the mind of the moment before, the visual awareness of the moment before. That's the thing that turns into the visual awareness of the moment after. I admit there are many other causes going on, many other conditions. I'm here as your object. You have the eyeball helping you out. That you have the what do they call it? The cornea in your eyes.
Iris.
Opening and closing. And those are all helping. The main cause for your visual awareness of me is the one from the moment before.
Michael, how does the karma fit into that? I mean, you talked about the main cause being a karma. You know?
We're getting there.
So it's still the main cause is really the visual perception that immediately
the
follows.
Direct cause. The direct cause. What we call the direct cause is the visual awareness of the moment before. Of the millisecond before. You can think of it like this. I mean, here's the... Let's say it's going this way, okay? Here's your awareness during moment one, and then here's your awareness during moment two, and then here's your awareness during milliseconds, okay? Milliseconds. Okay, they're going like this. You're aware of me, you're aware of me, you're aware of me. You're aware of seeing me, actually. Okay? My color, actually, if you want to get technical. Your eye consciousness, your awareness of seeing me at moment number one is the direct cause of your awareness of seeing me at moment number two. Let's say you keep your eyes on me for 3 milliseconds. Is number one, is the visual awareness at moment number one still the direct cause of the visual awareness at moment number three?
No,
because there's something
in between.
That's important for our argument tonight, okay? That's called, what do you want to call that cause? I don't like so much indirect, but just in Tibetan it's like stream.
In between.
Or...
intermediary.
No, I mean, this one is a cause for three, but it's not a direct cause, it's a...
Delayed,
maybe. The word in Tibetan
buffer.
Is like a stream.
It's a built upon cause.
There is a good way to say
it.
It's a... What it means is, after a certain moment of streaming...
Lapse.
Yeah, you can say lapse, but the words... Is there something that says stream, some kind of idea of stream? I could say indirect, but I don't like indirect so much because there are other little causes hanging out here which are indirect causes of it.
Can you describe that thing again? What is that?
If I call number one a direct cause of number two...
Right, uh-huh.
What do I call... What kind of cause do I call number one of number three? It's not direct.
But what? How did you describe whatever that
it's
was?
It's happening in a stream.
It's a preceding section of a direct continuum.
I mean, if I translate if I translate it literally in Tibetan, it would be what do you call your root lama and your lineage lama? See, lineage lama start just before your root lama, and the word is lineage cause. You know, it's a stream cause. It has to stream on a little bit further, and then. It's not direct anymore.
But I'm going back even before that when you described what that was.
Oh, visual consciousness. Your consciousness of seeing me.
Right, okay, and then...
And then at this moment, and then this moment.
Right, okay.
That's the visual consciousness you had when I had my finger here was the cause of the visual consciousness of me here.
Right.
Direct cause.
And so that's 1, 2, 3, but then... And that's the direct...
Now if I go like that, then... Your visual consciousness of my finger at this moment was a cause of your visual consciousness at this moment, but not direct because there was something between.
Oh.
But these two are direct. And it's very important what, I forget who said it, but something's in between. In this case, when you're talking about these two, there is nothing in between. because they are happening milliseconds together.
So how do you want to call them?
I'm talking now about direct cause, okay? Mm. When you're talking about a direct mental cause and a direct mental result, the consciousness of Mike at instant one and the consciousness of him at instant two, and there's nothing between there.
What's wrong with indirect?
Does this look familiar? I like indirect, but what I'm saying is that there's other little causes and factors that are contributing to three that are indirect, but they're happening just before. But we'll talk. We don't have
to say, Michael, could you say that when something changes from a cause to a result, that's sort of the point at which you're talking about, right? You're not talking about that which led up to it. You're talking about the spot where
I am talking direct, and I define it as the way she did naturally, which I liked it in that way. There's nothing in between. Okay. Does this look familiar?
Pulling parts.
Does this look familiar? Do you recognize these guys?
Yeah.
Right? Does every part of this instant? Is every part of the second awareness equally close to the first awareness? Is every line of this square equally close to every line of this square?
No. What do you mean by close, Michael?
I'm just saying, this line is close to here, as this line is close to here? No.
The time.
If every part of this instant overlaps every part of this instant, then what?
We'd only have one instant.
If you score one out of guy, we only have one instant to live. if there were no part of instant two that were any further along in time than a particular part of instant one, then they would overlap. And you wouldn't have time.
But Michael,
there have to be parts of instant two that are a little bit longer along in time than some other parts of instant two, because if it weren't true, then instant two would overlap itself and there would never be another instant.
This is harder for me to understand than the adding with seven.
It's exactly the same.
Since I was a kid, I mean, we were taught about atoms, but yeah. With time, doesn't there have to be something that comes between instant one and instant two? Otherwise, how do you tell instant one from instant two?
Oh, good question. If there were something between instant one and instant two, then I say, we're not talking about direct cause and effect. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a priori. You have agreed after you came down here after that nice food, and you were still lazy and you didn't object to what I said. There was a direct cause and a direct result. Boom, boom. And there was, according to Nina, nothing between. And that's true. There is such a thing. There is such a thing as a direct cause and a direct result. That we call it chibo-sutuma. Chibo-sutuma means flip-flop. The cause flip-flops into the result. You know, boom. And there's nothing between. It's even called flip-flop. The definition, one of the definitions of a cause is previous flop, I guess, flip of flip flop, and the result is the flop of flip flop. You see?
What?
So there's nothing in between. If you want to posit something in between, then you've just ruined the idea of cause and effect, of a direct cause and a direct result.
So we have found something that can't be subdivided. Then
why?
Time.
What you just said. Then there can't be a cause and a result. If we have
right.
it.
So I'm saying
that in Buddhism postulates that there is something that cannot be further subdivided, and that is the flip flop of a cause and a result.
Direct cause.
Of a direct cause and a direct result.
How small do they make these moments in time? I mean, they have to be instant.
There are 64 in one finger step.
That's true.
They're called Dute Kechigma. I mean, the Abhidhamma system says there isn't the smallest measurement of time, and the other schools say impossible.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Impossible, right, because that moment in time...
It's subdividing it.
No, because there's a part of that moment in time which is closer to the previous moment of time, and there's a part of that moment in time which is closer to the next moment of time, and if that weren't so, then it would just overlap with one of those moments, and there would be no movement in time.
So it's
one really long.
You These are interesting questions.
In the time that it takes to ask the question.
By the
time you're
finally,
you know, computing all the time changing, it's still gone.
This is the proof that...
In the time that it takes to ask the question. By the time you're finally, you know, computing all the time changing, it's still gone.
This is the proof that mental things happen. And I, you know, you could debate it for a long time. You're welcome to stand outside after class.
Michael, that mental things have parts, or that mental things appear to have parts?
Have parts to a deceptive knowledge.
Which means appear to have parts.
Right.
Thank you.
But not really have parts.
Ah, no. You just proved that this whole side of stuff has parts. Now we just carry on unchanging things. Try to name some unchanging things for me. There are only three classical examples.
You got it.
I did have it. Boy, this is a gift, I have to say. Okay. We'll start with empty space.
Just give us the quiz now. You want to give us the gift.
Empty space.
Open book.
Yeah.
By the way, people from the first course, this is all flowing back to you. Oh, the independence. They said... Their explanation of dependent origination was better because it covered all existing things and not just cause things. Right, remember that, right? Thank you. Now I have to go to the board, okay? Because this is hard for me. Okay, let's start. He starts with cessation. What's a cessation?
Nibbana.
That is one cessation, yeah. Of what? What did you stop?
Afflictive emotions.
Yeah, mental afflictions and their cease. Okay. That is one kind of cessation. Cessations are permanent?
Pretty much permanent.
You're fine for a class three.
Yeah, true.
Pretty general speaking. They, in being an absence of something, they are unchanging. I don't like the word permanent, okay? Because they are absences of something, they are unchanging. Their quality never changes. You never get more or less free of mental afflictions after you stop them. You're just free. Thus, that quality never changes. It never gets bigger or less or anything else.
Well, you're experiencing it.
No, not even that. Okay.
So if you achieve freedom from afflictive emotions, sort of some of the time you haven't achieved cessation. By definition, cessation has to be something that's unchanging.
Right, but you can, and that's the example that you said. When you talk about the truth of cessation, he says, can you? Is there a kind of cessation where you have given up the intellectual belief in self-existence, but you have yet to give up seeing things as self-existent?
Yes.
We've been talking about that a lot. Yeah. Well, who is that? In the magician's story, it's a person who has...
Magician.
Right. He still sees it as self-existent. Mm-hmm. He's forced to.
He's not.
He knows he's crazy. He knows it's a spell. He knows it's not really there. He knows there's no real force there.
But did you just say intellectually?
Yeah, we're talking about a person now who's seen emptiness directly. He has reached past path number three. He's just become an Arya. He's achieved the path of seeing. During those short minutes that he sees it directly, I'm not talking about those, but right after that, you can imagine that he just saw what I described to you at the beginning of this class. I'm sorry, he saw that before. But anyway, he will never again believe his eyes. Although his eyes are still lying. He knows his eyes are lying. He will still see things as self-existent, but he knows it's not that way. And in fact, he'll reach nirvana on the day that he can stop seeing things as self-existent.
Who are you referring to in this context?
Okay.
Cessation.
I'm talking, what I'm describing.
Yeah.
Is a cessation that has parts. Because what? It has a part of having given up. We're talking about the guy who just saw emptiness directly. OK? Okay, his cessation. What did he? He does have what we call the truth of cessation. General truth of cessation in the three, in the four Arya truths. He does have the truth of cessation in him. He owns the truth of cessation. In fact, that's what makes him and a object of refuge. Okay. He has the truth of cessation in him. And that truth of cessation has two parts. One, it is a cessation of
mental
intellectual belief in emptiness.
A cessation of
intellectual belief in emptiness. But he still has what?
He still sees this as self-existent.
He still has this inborn perception of self. He still has this inborn, this inherent that people are born with, belief. I'm sorry, I should say perception of things. So in a sense, his cessation has two parts. A part of the cessation where he's got rid of the intellectual belief in self-existence. And a part of the cessation where he hasn't got rid of the innate perception of self-existence. So his big perception, his cessation there, if you want to look at it, see it as an egg, okay? Two parts here. This is his truth of cessation. And this part doesn't have any more the belief in things, the intellectual belief in things as self-existence. He doesn't believe what he sees. But this part still has
the perception
of things as self-existence. The appearance of things to him as
self-existence.
So his cessation has
parts.
So
when he
both thinks and believes that things are not self-existent, then he does not have cessation anymore. It is a different stage. It's not called cessation anymore. Is that what you're saying?
This whole thing is called truth of cessation. He has a truth of cessation which is characterized by not having any more the intellectual belief in self-existence, and by still having.
Right.
That's the nature of his cessation.
What happens? I mean, would you say that he has full cessation? I mean, I don't know if this is a good word to say. When he both
that's
believes
true.
And sees,
yeah.
Still
when
cessation.
He reaches the point of the spectator who came later, he will have an empty egg. But that doesn't fit my needs tonight. I need to prove it has parts. Okay. All right. We go on. Empty space. That was easy. Kylie, do you remember any of the arguments?
North, south,
east,
to west.
Space has parts.
Oh, the directions, huh? North, south.
Yeah, okay. West. By the way, what is empty space? It is very hard to perceive.
It's the absence of an obstruction.
Yeah, it is not the place between these, you see it in people trying to explain space. It is not the place between two edges. It's not that. That's wrong. Okay. Space is where this whole thing is being. Space is empty space is where this pen is sitting, is located right now. You can even think of it as location.
So how would you define empty space then?
Empty space is the absence of, what did we call it?
Obstruction.
By the way, it's a real bugger with me. I hate to hear it misexplained. Okay? Is the pen in empty space? Yeah, it's occupying
empty
space.
Space too.
We are too. So is New York City and so is the planet. And when I take the pen out of empty space, where did the empty space go?
Still there.
It's never going to move. I'm getting Barbadian in my...
But how can you take
the pen? Okay? It's never going to be... you can take the pen in and out of empty space. The empty space is hanging there. And it always
will.
You can
never take the pen out of empty space. Because isn't actually empty space is part of the pen?
That empty space, which is good for my point, I took it out of the empty space, which is 1 foot east, and I moved it to the empty space, which is 1 foot west. And those are the parts of empty space.
What are the parts? How do you define the parts?
Here. The pen is now in the eastern empty space. And now I move it to the western empty space. And I really prefer the word empty when you say space. When you translate that word, most people translate it as space. I think you get into trouble. This is space too. That's not what it means. And the Abhidharma figured that out. They have an argument about it.
Okay. So this would be the four cardinal directions, north and south?
I don't care. Up, down, there, here, around, left side, right side. You can say anything, but empty space.
Can't get there from here.
All right. We're going to finish on time. If we can do emptiness.
You're
really
right, actually.
Sorry. Okay, let's see what he says here. I'm going to show you guys. I can explain it to the next one. Oh, no, you're my guinea pigs. I apologize.
I'm the ongoing guy.
And by the way, which answer did all this correlate to?
Empty space.
Part six. Part of empty.
Number six.
Number six on the homework.
You go up to
39th Street. Okay. He says, is the emptiness, which is a quality of the table, is that emptiness, which is quality of the table, also the emptiness, which is a quality of the chair? Okay. I have trouble with that. Let's take emptiness in general. Okay. Emptiness. The emptiness, which is a quality of the table, and the emptiness, which is a quality of the chair, are different.
But is the emptiness of two pens, exact pens, the same?
No.
So no emptiness is the same.
Right. Every object has its own emptiness, by the way.
As long as that object exists.
Well, when you say object, is a synonym for existence.
So the emptiness for that object ceases to exist when that object ceases to exist.
Right, and that's why I don't like the word permanent and impermanent in reference to things like empty. It's not eternal.
So then emptiness is also something that's changing. Because when the object changes and goes away, its emptiness goes away.
Ah, now we get to a subtle point, which you will perceive someday. Directly.
Seriously.
Which is it? I'm not saying, no, it's not a joke. It's a very deep thing. It's a very, very deep perception you will have one day. That the emptiness can go in and out of existence, but it never changes, and it never starts, and it never ends. And that's a difficult thing to realize. It's a difficult thing to perceive. It can be it can go out of existence, it can come into existence. It doesn't start, and it doesn't end. And you just have to cook that. I can't make you realize that directly. You have to meditate on it. I can describe it to you, and it's true. But you have to think about it.
Go in and out of existence?
It can go in and out of existence.
But
it cannot begin or start or end.
So it moves around, maybe.
It's there or it's not there. But it doesn't begin or end. And you just have to cook it. I tell you someday you will see it.
So is there a moment right before it's there that it's kind of starting to be there, and it's there a little more. It's just instantaneous.
No, changing things are always that way.
No.
Changing things are always starting to start, halfway through starting, getting close to the end of starting. It does not apply to emptiness.
So what are the parts of emptiness?
That emptiness, which is the nature of the chair, and that emptiness, which is the ultimate nature of the table, are different parts of emptiness.
So
when you get rid of the table, then
apparently when you say quality, you escape this problem. Now read it more carefully. It doesn't just say the emptiness of the table and the emptiness of the chair. It says that emptiness, which is a quality of the chair. Apparently that distinction helps. Anyway, just basically what you can come out of that with, I'll read it more and try. If there's anything more information about it, I'll tell you, because I understand the objection. Or the question. But in general, be aware that every object has its own emptiness.
And as long as
it's
around.
You see,
because
we're working on logic, and yeah, we have to believe you, what you say.
Because, good, I like it. Let me study it more carefully. So we'll say that for purposes of this evening, so you can go home on time, if there's three kinds of unchanging things, we've conclusively covered this much. Oh, I'm going over there. Those things have parts. Probably everything, and at least I proved it for everything except emptiness pretty well. If they have parts, then they can't be what? What are we trying to prove?
Really?
One.
And they can't really exist as?
One.
We're only proving that. We didn't even get to the second part yet. That's all I wanted to do tonight. I'm starting to realize that's all we can do. Yes, me too. Okay. We just proved that everything in the universe has parts. If it's true that everything that has parts can't exist really, then nothing in the universe
really exists.
Mm. Good night. I think you were done. Okay, what are we, homework 9? Oh, you got it.
We got it.
Sasi Bhagi Jusheme Tosham Viravin Shinyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mitte Uwagi Jogunanda Shiva
This is the end of Class 9.